This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Justice Stephen Breyer could announce his retirement from the Supreme Court at the White House just a little bit later today. It comes at a critical time for President Biden. The president has now been in office for one full year. Build Back Better has stalled Congress, and there's rising tension from Russia on the border with Ukraine. Now the president has an opportunity. Will he deliver on his campaign promise to name the first black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court? It's our full hour of national politics with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you, Lucy, and congratulations to you.
Oh, thank you. And also joining us is WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Lucy.
If you have questions or comments, you can join our conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. But before we start our conversation, Ken, we want to get to a very important matter, and that's the trivia question. Can you tell us what it is this month?
Yes, that's the most important thing that America is waiting for. Since we're talking about Supreme Court justices, it's a Supreme Court trivia question. Who was the last Supreme Court justice who, after leaving the court, ran for public office?
That's a good one. So if you think you have an answer, call us at 513-419-7100. We will get right to the questions. We talked about this big announcement from Justice Breyer. Ken, do you think this, how quickly do you think the Senate will want to move on this, assuming that this announcement comes and the president comes forward with a nomination?
Well, Chuck Schumer, who is nominally running the Senate, certainly he's the Senate majority leader. He said he wants to act as soon as President Biden comes up with a name. And I suspect that that will come very soon. Obviously, Biden wanted to wait for Justice Breyer to make the announcement official. And as you say, it's likely to happen today. But once there is an opening, a resignation that's coming as soon as June or July, I think Biden and the White House will be ready with a nominee. And Chuck Schumer says he's going to get to it as soon as possible, which means as long as the Democrats still control the Senate, because they're very worried. Everybody's worried. Democrats are worried, certainly, that the Republicans are going to take over the Senate in the 2022 midterm elections. And that's why having a vote before then is critical.
Yeah. So who do you think some of the likely candidates are, Ken?
Well, they've talked about a bunch of people. There's a woman named Katrina. Well, first of all, during his debates, it was 2020 when Joe Biden was debating. He promised not only a female running mate, but a black female Supreme Court justice, which we've never had before. And the two top names on the list is a judge by the name of Ketanji Brown Jackson. She's on the D.C. Court of Appeals. She's 51 years old. She went to Harvard Law, which is certainly a good thing to have on a resume if you want to wind up on the Supreme Court. And she was a clerk for Justice Breyer. There's another woman named Leandra Kruger, who's 45 years old. And by the way, I'm mentioning their ages for a certain reason, a deliberate reason. Stephen Breyer is 83 years old. And because he is of advanced age, and because the Democrats are so fearful they're going to lose the Senate, they're afraid that Stephen Breyer needs to be replaced as soon as possible. Anyway, Leandra Kruger, who's 45, serves on the California Supreme Court. She went to Yale Law School, and she was a clerk for former Justice John Paul Stevens. Those are thought to be the top two contenders.
Hmm. So do you think there will be trouble with confirmation in the Senate, assuming that that Justice Breyer does announce his retirement and the president makes a nomination?
I don't. I mean, of course, everybody's saying, well, what about Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, the two Democrats, the two nominal Democrats? Well, no, they are Democrats who have given President Biden and his agenda such trouble. But both Manchin and Sinema have voted in favor of every Biden judge that he has put before the Senate. So while people are always nervous about them, it may be a 50-50 vote with Kamala Harris, the vice president, casting the tie, which would be regrettable, but that's basically, that's what's become of our politics today.
Yeah. You think there's any chance that some Republicans would vote to confirm either of those two front runners you mentioned?
That's possible because I know that Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine have both voted for both voted against Republican Supreme Court justices. One voted against Comey Bryant. One voted against Kavanaugh, and they voted more in favor of Biden judges than any other Republicans. It's possible. And of course, you know, there are some Republicans who have voted against all 42 of Biden's judge nominees. So, but it's very possible that you could get a one or two Republican. But if you get more than that, that would be a shock.
Yeah. Howard, did you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah. And I'd like to hear what Ken has to say about this, too. You know, we know what the campaign promise was. The campaign promise was that at the first opportunity, Joe Biden would nominate a black woman for the Supreme Court. And I think he will. And Ken's already, you know, mentioned the two who were seen to be the front runners for this, Kruger and Jackson. I'm wondering, though, when he made this promise in 2020, he was going into the South Carolina primary, and his campaign was in fair amount of trouble. And he said this down in South Carolina, and James Clyburn, the congressman, African-American congressman from South Carolina, who wields a lot of power in that state, said, I'm for Joe Biden if he's going to do that. Now, Clyburn has his own candidate who is a fair federal judge down in South Carolina by the name of J. Michelle Childs. And he has reportedly been lobbying Biden to appoint Childs. And it would be interesting to see if that kind of a political chit laying out there that they would actually, you know, Biden might do that in order to pay back Clyburn for his help in getting the nomination.
Yeah.
Well, I think by naming a black woman, that kind of satisfies Clyburn and the African American community. But you're right, Clyburn does have his own choice. And it's interesting, Harry, when you said Biden was in some sort of trouble. I think finishing fourth in the Iowa caucuses and fifth in New Hampshire primary, it would be defined as some sort of trouble. So yes, South Carolina did rescue him. But one thing I also want to add about this, which is sad. I mean, there's been such pressure on Stephen Breyer to retire early, even though his health is fine, unlike Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who had many bouts of cancer. But the progressive left has been pushing on Breyer basically to step down early because they're very aware that what happened with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that she was ill, and under President Obama, there were many liberals who said, I thought this was unfortunate, but they pursued a campaign to get her to retire so that President Obama would name a replacement. She didn't. She held on. Obviously, she tried to stay. I know this sounds kind of odd to say, but she basically tried to stay alive as long as she could in the hope or the expectation that Joe Biden was going to defeat President Trump. She died before the election, and by staying on the court, that gave President Trump another chance to nominate another conservative, and that was Amy Coney Barrett. So the progressive left decided we can't let this happen again. We've got to get Breyer to step down so Biden could name somebody younger.
Yeah. So we have a caller on the line with a question. We're going to get to him now. Hi, you're on Cincinnati Edition.
Ken?
Hi.
Yes.
Hello. Yeah, a question. 20 years ago, Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer used the filibuster to block the nomination of Janice Rogers Brown. Do you think that they will be able to reconcile their enthusiasm for the candidates now with their behavior in the past?
Well, both sides did play the filibuster game, but I think the reason that, that the rules started to get changed was during the Obama administration in 2013. There were so many so many Republicans who would filibuster every Obama judgeship nomination that Harry Reid changed the rules. Harry Reid said, look, we're not getting anywhere. They're being obstructionist. We need to get rid of the filibuster for certain judicial nominations. Now, I think that came to backfire on the Republican Party because of once Trump got in, he named three judges and there was no filibuster. So, yes, both parties have a history of backing filibusters in the past. But since that rule has been thrown out, I don't think neither party is clean on filibusters. And two, nobody's going to bring up a past filibuster supporting because both sides did it.
Thank you, Sean. Did that answer your question?
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Okay. So what do you think? Do either of you have opinions? I guess I'll start with you, Ken. What do you think Senator Mitch McConnell is going to have to say about all this?
Well, they've asked him a million times and basically he said, well, look, you know, I'll wait to see whom President Biden nominates. I mean, basically, I mean, this is, and we were talking about this before we went on the air, but one of the things that eats at me the most about what Mitch McConnell has done as the majority leader in the Senate when the Republicans had control was when President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court with about 9 or 10 months to go in his term. And Mitch McConnell not only refused to vote, but refused a hearing on Garland's nomination because he said he wants to leave it up to the winner of the presidential election 10 months later. So Merrick Garland never got a hearing, never got a vote. And then that was the end of that. And then President Trump was elected and got a judgeship of his liking. And yet when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died in 2020, and then Mitch McConnell said, well, you know, this is like 2 months before the election. He said, well, you know, we got to get a judge right now. And so Amy Coney Barrett, I think between the nomination was announced and the hearings and the confirmation vote, it was 9 seconds. I mean, it was ridiculous. You know, the everything that Mitch McConnell said about holding on until the election in 2020 changed when Trump was elected. So Mitch McConnell knows the power he has had, but I don't think he has that power now as long as he is minority leader. There's nothing he can do. He can't stop the nomination. He can't filibuster the nomination. And he has said in the past that if the Republicans take over the Senate after the 2022 midterms, I cannot promise that I will allow Biden judgeship to go forward. So with that in mind, Democrats know that they have to get this done as soon as possible.
Mm. So I would.
They can. They have the tools to do this.
Gotcha. The Democrats do, you mean, Howard?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They have the tools to do this. Now, I mean, it was the Republicans themselves in 2017 who got rid of the filibuster for the Supreme Court nominations. And there's really nothing. As Ken says, there's nothing that Mitch McConnell can do about it.
Yeah. Do you think this could be a big win for President Biden before the midterms, if they can move quickly, as you suggested they want to, Ken?
Well, a big win, you know, I don't think anything's a big win anymore. A big win would have been Merrick Garland getting a vote. This is basically going to replace a liberal with a liberal, and ultimately it won't change the trajectory of the court. It won't change whether it's, you know, it'll still stay very conservative. But given the fact that the headlines about Biden have been so negative, given the spread of the pandemic and inflation, you know, go into a store and see the cost of meat and gasoline. Of course, you don't go into a store to find out the price of gasoline, but everything is much more expensive than it should have been. I think Biden needs all the good news he can, and this could be good news. But as I said, I feel sorry for Breyer because he was not ready to leave, and basically he had no choice but to accede to the will of those clamoring for his resignation.
Yeah. So we do have a caller on the line who has a guess for the trivia question. Ken, would you mind reminding us what that question is again?
Who was the last former Supreme Court justice who, after leaving the court, ran for public office?
And Ken, I forgot to ask you, what fabulous prize will the caller with the correct response win?
They win the house keys to Howard Wilkinson's apartment, and they win a political junkie button.
Well, I know they'll win one of those things, so let me go ahead.
they're welcome.
Yeah. So, welcome to Renee. Oh, I did that wrong. So, Renee, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. What is your guess for the trivia question?
My guess is William Howard Taft.
Well, that's a great guess. I mean, William Howard Taft but he was on the Supreme Court, and after he left, he did run for president, and then he came back and he did come back. I have to think of this for a second.
Other way around.
Yeah, right, exactly. After William Howard Taft lost his bid for reelection in 1912, he was later appointed to the Supreme Court. And that's a good guess, but there was somebody more recent than Taft.
Gotcha.
Thanks, Howard.
Thank you very much for your call.
Sure.
Okay. So let's shift the discussion to President Biden's first year in office. We were talking about the midterms and how concerning that is for both parties. There was a Politico headline earlier this week that was Biden's first year, a tale of two presidencies. What's your take on that? And what do you think that those kind of different results mean going into the midterms in just a few months?
Well, I think it's fair. There has been good news and there's been bad news for Biden. And I think most of the headlines have been bad and perhaps deservedly. I think basically that the American people are exhausted. I think they were exhausted after the COVID, which they didn't think would last this long, is still going on. There's still about 2,200, 2,400 Americans dying each month. Is it each week or is it each month? Or is it each day?
It's terrible no matter what.
Actually, I think it's each day dying around the country for this, and it's supposed to continue. And the fact is, as I said, that, you go into a store, you can't find chicken, you can't find meat. You can't buy a used car. And if you do buy a used car, you can't afford the gas to fill the tank. So the headlines are not good. Inflation is the worst in 40 years. Now, I could point out to a lot of things in the past, like inflation was really high in 1982. Ronald Reagan and the Republicans were taking a beating. And then 2 years later, Reagan won 49 states. Inflation was really bad with Barack Obama in 2010. Republicans went crazy and won almost every midterm result in 2010. But then in 2012, Obama wound up winning. So ultimately, Biden could come back from this. But right now, the headlines are not good. His approval ratings are in the low 40s. I think it was like 51% when it started, but now it's 42%, which is similar to what Reagan went through. But the point is that he has a long way to go. And again, if the Republicans do win the midterm elections, can pick up the House and Senate in November, one of two things could happen. One, they could make life miserable for Biden and he'll get absolutely nothing done. Or they could do what Newt Gingrich managed to do after 1994 and go and extend themselves too far, with their new contract for America, and maybe the Democrats could bounce back. But the headlines are not great for the president. Yes, they did pass an infrastructure bill. Yes, they did get vaccines and masks to millions and millions of Americans, which I'm not belittling at all. But some of the big plans, the big agenda plans for Joe Biden were the voting bill and the Build Back Better. And it's basically two Democrats who I mentioned earlier, Sinema and Manchin, who caused that defeat. So Biden is not getting everything he wants, to say the least. but he could use some good news right now.
Yeah. So what do you think this means for the midterms?
Well, I mean, Howard, I'll let Howard talk as well, but I kind of think that Republicans are going to win both the House. First of all, in the House, they control most of the redistricting around the country, and Howard's an expert on that, certainly in Ohio. But it looks like they're going to pick up seats on redistricting alone. And of course, if you draw the districts, you draw who comes out and votes for whom. So the House could be gone. And, if the Democrats lose Mark Kelly in Arizona, if they lose, Raphael Warnock in Georgia, it's very possible that that the Republicans could get the Senate as well.
Yeah. Howard, did you have something you wanted to add there?
I agree that I think it's most likely that the Democrats are going to lose the House and the Senate this fall. And that is not necessarily a really bad thing for Joe Biden and the Democrats looking forward to 2024, because as Ken pointed out, we've been down this road before with Newt Gingrich and, and his big plan, which fizzled out. Now, in that case, there was a very skilled politician in the White House who was, frankly, smarter than Newt Gingrich. And it's going to be interesting to see how Biden would play that kind of a role. He's a smart guy, too. He was in the Senate for a very long time, and he knows how it works. But as far as good news is concerned, he did get some today with the growth in the economy.
But you said something that it may not be bad news if the Republican for the Biden administration, if the Republicans win Congress. I think it would be terrible because basically with Mitch McConnell in charge of the Republicans, forget about getting anything done in the final 2 years of the Biden presidency.
So have one more caller with a answer to the trivia question. I want to get to him before we get to take a break. Dave, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. What is your guess for trivia?
Arthur Goldberg.
Well, Arthur Goldberg is the correct answer.
Woo-hoo!
Are we saying that Michael didn't take the bell with him when he fled to Kentucky?
Nope.
Okay, so we still have the bell. Okay, that's good. Arthur Goldberg, this is a fascinating story. If I have time, I'll try to get this in before the commercial break. Arthur Goldberg was put on the court by JFK in 1962. Lyndon Johnson wanted badly to have his crony, Abe Fortas, get on the court. So he convinced Goldberg to get off the court and take the ambassadorship to the UN, which Goldberg didn't want. And it was a cunning move by Johnson to get his crony on the court. Goldberg was off the court. He resigned from the court in 65 and ran for governor of New York in 1970, but he lost to Nelson Rockefeller. That was all one sentence, by the way.
That was an impressive sentence.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Dave.
And Dave wins the coveted political junkie button.
That's right. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. It's our full hour of national politics with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Also joining us is WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. So I wanted to ask one more question about President Biden's first year in office. Howard, you referenced this. President Biden was in the Senate for a real long time. Based on his experience in the Senate, Ken and Howard, would you expect him to be doing better right now?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, just because of the circumstances have changed and the cast of characters has changed and things are not the way they were in Joe Biden's heyday in the Senate, where there was a little bit more collegiality and there was a possibility of the two parties coming together and actually compromising on issues. And that doesn't... It's so polarized, both in Congress and the country as a whole at this point, that he's having a hard time. There's no question about that. But as his chief of staff pointed out the other day, he said, well, we were elected for 4 years, not 1 year. We're not going to give up on our agenda. And ultimately, he may come out ahead. But right now, he is not.
Yeah, I agree with Howard. I mean, clearly that Joe Biden, having spent 423 years in the Senate, he was convinced, actually it was 36 years, but he was convinced that having worked with Democrats and Republicans during his six terms in the Senate, he would have accomplished a lot because he knows how to go along to get along. Well, as Howard said, this is a different Senate. There is no bipartisanship. And I think Biden really understands that what existed when he was in the Senate doesn't exist anymore. And so when you hear people like Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin saying, well, I would like to get rid of the filibuster, but I would like to do it only if we can agree with Republicans on this. They're not going to agree with Republicans on anything because there's no reason for Republicans to concede on anything because they're on their way for taking control. So I think what the Republicans are doing for their party, not for the country, but for their party is very smart. Basically sitting back, doing nothing. I mean, it's one thing to blame Sinema and Manchin for everything that's going wrong, but it's 50 Republicans who are trying to stop everything that Biden is doing. Yeah. So yes, there are two Democrats who are doing it as well, but I think days of reconciliation and bipartisanship are long over.
Yeah. So I want to shift the conversation now to Russia. A spokesman for President Vladimir Putin said today there is little optimism about ending Russia's confrontation with the U.S. and NATO over Ukraine. Let's talk about those rising tensions. What do you think the stakes are here, Ken?
Well, they're enormous. I mean, the thought of not only the thought of Russia invading Ukraine being just so possibly cataclysmic, but the fact that the United States has promised to defend Ukraine or certainly promised to order up punishing sanctions against Russia. Look, you know, what's the problem with this is that the United States doesn't speak with one voice on this because there's a growing presence on the radical right led by people like Tucker Carlson, who said basically that Russia is right. That, look, you know, why should they agree to have the United States bolstering Ukraine? Why should they agree for NATO to have Ukraine as a member on their border? So you have right wing, when the Republican Party used to be rabidly anti-communist, anti-Soviet Union, now you have crazy right wingers who are basically saying that Putin is right. I mean, when you have Donald Trump standing with Putin and saying that, you know, this is back in Helsinki, when Trump says, I agree with Putin, I don't agree with my own military intelligence officers, it's madness. And this is what's happened to the Republican Party, which is not something I recognized when I was younger, when you knew where the GOP stood on foreign policy. So it's a very scary time. Russia doesn't look like it's ready to back down. It's hard to make the case I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen. But if Russia wants to test the U.S., which I think Putin likes to do, you know, I mean, like, remember when Obama said Syria crosses a red line when it comes to chemical weapons, we're going to do something. Well, Syria crossed a red line with nuclear chemical weapons, and Obama didn't do anything, and the Senate didn't do anything. So this could be a very tough time for U.S. foreign policy.
Amazing to me that we've got one of those Republican congressman here in our local delegation over on in Northern Kentucky, and Thomas Massie, who's siding with the Russians on this. And it's just like, as Ken says, this is just inexplicable for people of our generation, particularly, who remember when Republicans were lined up against Russia and everything that it stood for in the Soviet Union days.
So what do you think is responsible for some people who consider themselves Republicans for siding with Putin in this way?
Donald Trump, mainly.
There are two wings of the Republican Party. There is the usual heretofore predictable anti-communist Republican wing that would do everything that opposes Russia and China and the communist world. But there are these rabid isolationists who want nothing to do, you know, who feel that, you know, I mean, the fact that you have Tucker Carlson and Thomas Massey and other conservatives in the Republican Party saying that Putin is right, and then, you know, and besides, we're probably defending Ukraine because of Hunter Biden. I mean, the insanity that's coming out of some of these people is just beyond belief. But the fact is that we don't know what to make of these arguments anymore. And of course, we're talking, it's very possible, look, when the United States and the former Soviet Union, when the United States and Russia are going at loggerheads over a military issue, I mean, this is not two little countries here. These are two countries with gigantic warheads, nuclear warheads. And if, you know, one person wants to get reckless, we could be in big trouble.
Yeah. So what are the implications for kind of everyday Americans when this? I know there's been reporting on oil and gas prices and just other implications. Ken, what do you think the implications are for the public at large?
I don't know. When I was in high school, I remember this during the campaign of 1968, the Soviet Union invaded Czechoslovakia. Czechoslovakia was starting with some kind of democratic plans, and that was not good for Moscow. And Brezhnev and company invaded Czechoslovakia, and there was nothing we can do. And I don't remember being affected one way or the other by the invasion of Czechoslovakia. But you're right, though. There's a lot of the other things that's involved here. They could punish. You know, if we put in punishing sanctions, Russia could retaliate by punishing sanctions regarding oil distribution in Western Europe. So they could shut down the pipeline. So, I mean, I don't know how this would affect John and Jane Q Citizen, but I think the ramifications around Europe, around foreign policy, around Biden's prestige around the world could take a gigantic hit.
Yeah. We have a caller. Rob, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. What is your question or comment?
Yeah, I just want to say that from my point of view, the GOP should stonewall not only the justice nomination, but anything else they can. I'm sorry, but after the last 7 years from the woke past on the left, I don't even want justice anymore. I just want revenge. I want them to stop anything he wants to do, just on principle alone. This country is horribly off because of the policies of just the last year.
Okay, I'm going
to... But here's the question, though. He's the president of the United States. Because you want him to not get anything accomplished, I mean, what's the justification for something like that?
Because everything he does makes it worse. So him doing nothing at all would be better off for the American people.
But if an 83-year-old liberal justice of the Supreme Court resigns and he wants to name, let's say, a 53-year-old liberal Supreme Court, how does that make things worse?
You want to talk about the nomination? Well, I mean, you guys are arguing about affirmative action. How affirmative action is it that, you know, from the get-go, he says, okay, no men should apply. Nobody that's white should apply. I mean, I'm sorry. That's just racist and sexist.
Well, thank you for your call, Rob. I really appreciate your perspective. So getting back to Russia, Ken, do you think that... Sorry, I lost my place here. Getting back to Russia, we talked a little bit about this, the effects of oil and gas, but CNN's Stephen Collinson also wrote the other day that this could be the most tense test of wills since the fall of the Soviet Union. What is the, you know, what do you think that this could come down to in terms of on the ground and, you know, in that part of the world?
Well, actually, you know, when you quoted the CNN guy about the fall of the Soviet Union, I was thinking of the Cuba Missile Crisis in 1962, when half the world was waiting for Kennedy and or Khrushchev to back down from this confrontation, and that's what it feels like. I mean, I think in many ways, you know, Putin being a former KGB agent as has shown no inclination, unlike, let's say, Boris Yeltsin. He has shown no inclination towards comedy, towards world peace. He just wants what he wants. And of course, Biden is under pressure for having such a mixed year of his first year of his presidency. He's going to want to respond with something very strong. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the world is watching every move that the two of them make.
Yeah, we have another caller on the line, so let's get to that. Keith, thank you so much for calling. What is your comment or question?
Well, I wanted to ask if they thought that Tucker Carlson's comments are motivated by, you know, money and power instead of him really believing that Putin should threaten Ukraine.
What do you think about that, Ken?
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. What's the question?
I was saying that people like Carlson don't really support Putin and Russia's ambitions. They just say these things for ratings and money and power.
Well, that's the fact that you have a bunch of people like Tucker Carlson saying just Tucker Carlson, but so many people on the radical right will be talking about how vaccinations are improper or not advised. Or, look, I can understand the argument against mandates, although I don't agree with that either. I think there should be mandates on vaccinations and masks. But people just say that masks don't work, vaccinations don't work, that, you know, maybe drinking, Windex is a better way of approaching this thing. It could be ratings. It could be to become outrageous. But the fact is, as we learn with the COVID, that hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Americans died, perhaps because they didn't listen to reason or they listened to the wrong things. And it's just so easy for Tucker Carlson to say, well, you know, Putin has a right to protect his border. But the fact is that not only is Russia threatening Ukraine, but they're also threatening to topple the government and put in a puppet regime. We have evidence that they've tried to influence and rig elections in this country. And the fact that we have broadcasters with tremendous influence on our television stations around the country backing this kind of thinking is just beyond belief.
Yeah. Thank you, Keith.
Yeah, people like Tucker Carlson can say anything because he has no skin in the game. You know, if it came to the point where the United States and NATO decided they had to go into Ukraine with troops on the ground, it would be a relative handful of American families who would be affected by that. And you can trace all of this back to Donald Trump and people who are parroting that line. And Tucker Carlson is certainly one of those.
Yeah.
And plus the fact that, you know, we talk about how the reputation of the United States completely changed under the Trump presidency. And Biden has to know that, well, are we going to, you know, he knows that our allies don't know what to think because we heard what Trump had to say for 4 years, and then maybe Biden will say something different. And then if Trump comes back in 2024, which is certainly a possibility, and goes back to a more of a pro-Moscow point of view, well, I mean, you know, the word of the United States used to be gold, but now nobody knows what to think. By the way, just for the record, Biden just spoke. Is speaking now, or Breyer speaking now, and he did announce that the successor to Stephen Breyer will be an African-American woman.
So we have another caller. Greg, you are on Cincinnati Edition. What is your question or comment?
Hello, thank you for having me. My question is, in regard to Russia's advances to the Ukraine border, how much do we honestly believe that he is going to cross that border? Because obviously he hasn't amassed enough military force at the borders just to stay in the country after he is invaded. How much of that do we think is honestly a bluff to get what he wants, in particular making sure that Ukraine doesn't join NATO? So essentially kind of like a Cold War feel where there may be a verge of, conflicting forces, but not actually, you know, getting to the point where he feels that he has to have a conflict.
So, Ken and Howard, we're running up against a break. What is your response in 30 seconds?
I think that's a very good point, and I'm not convinced that Putin is ready to do that, to actually invade the Ukraine. That's why yesterday he kind of backed off a little bit and said, well, I'm going to think about this.
But he also invaded Crimea, and a lot of people didn't think he would do that.
That's true.
And he's also military defending the separatists in Ukraine. So I wouldn't pay. Let's see how many P's I can get in this sentence. I wouldn't put anything past Putin.
Thanks so much for your call, Greg. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. It's our full hour of national politics with the political junkie, Ken Rudin, and also joining us is WVXU's senior political analyst, Howard Wilkinson. You can join our conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. We have a caller on the line right now. Hello, Murray. What is your question or comment?
Hi there, Lucy. So I don't have any, brilliant foreign policy, really thoughts to share, but one maybe funny thing that I have been thinking about ever since Trump's, I guess, first impeachment is someone described Volodymyr Zelensky as like the Steve Carell of Ukraine, because I guess he was like a really popular comedian and television actor and people liked him. And I guess since then, so for however many years at this point, I have been picturing, I can't wait for somebody to make a TV show, maybe Steve Carell will star in it, but just about Volodymyr Zelensky's past few years and like what a second act for any person to become the president of Ukraine at this time after being, you know, a comedian. I think about that all the time, and I don't know if that would help anybody else's, minds stuck in terror and worry during this time. But
well, thank you, Murray. What do you think about that, Ken, a Russia and your Ukrainian TV series about all this?
Well, we did have Al Franken, the Saturday Night Live comedian elected to the Senate from Minnesota. And we did have this actor by the name of Ronald Reagan, who I remember Pat Brown when he was running for governor. When Pat Brown was running to keep his seat as governor in California in 1966, he said, "What are you kidding? You want an actor? I mean, an actor killed Abraham Lincoln. I mean, it was so, so like, yikes." But you know something? There's something about Ukraine that basically, and I think the caller made a good point here, that that Ukraine was really what was responsible for the first impeachment of Donald Trump. So I just wonder if the right wing, if the pro-Trump faction in this country is maybe defending Russia just to get back at Ukraine may have been responsible for the beginning of the end for Donald Trump.
Thanks so much for calling, Murray. So what do you think about this, Ken? I think not only from a Republican perspective or very conservative perspective, there are some people who might be wondering why the United States should get involved. Some younger people who say, you know, the Cold War has been over for a long time. This getting involved in foreign countries can be really scary. What's the argument about that?
Well, it's a legitimate complaint. I mean, there are a lot of people who said that we should not be involved in Iraq or Afghanistan. I mean, even though the Senate seemed to agree on intervention in both countries, there are a lot of people saying, well, look, you know, what is Iraq going to, how does it affect me? Why do I have to, I mean, the thought of the thousands of Americans who were killed in Iraq and Afghanistan, my question is why? I mean, why? So at one point, I mean, I don't want to just say that Ukraine is not worth defending and Ukrainian lives are not worth defending. But there is a feeling in this country, certainly after Vietnam and certainly after Iraq and Afghanistan, that people say, OK, enough already. I mean, you know, we have a lot of problems at home. But that's a debate that's been going in this country on for, you know, half a century.
In my lifetime and your lifetime, there has been, you know, the United States has made some very poor decisions about, you know, when to take up arms and go defend or try to, you know, change the direction. You know, we mentioned, you know, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. Is this another one? I don't know. I hope not, because those have been disasters and they've done nothing but cost American lives.
So we've only got about 3 minutes left and our phone lines are blowing up. So I'm going to take another caller. AJ, what is your question or comment?
Yeah, hello. I guess I have kind of a comment. And this is just to say that I'm not really a person on the right at all. I would firmly put myself in the progressive camp, not really a friend of the Democrats either. But that being said, I was interested to hear that that people siding with, like, Putin's viewpoint on this is considered a rightist perspective. Because I just want to point out that, like, well, at a point we did tell Russia we weren't going to expand NATO, and then we did. and it's been clear for a long time that Russia sees NATO as like an intrinsic threat. You know, I'm not saying that they're necessarily right or wrong on this, but just think about it from the Russian perspective. I mean, it's hard to imagine the United States would tolerate a military alliance, a nuclear military alliance against it, right up against its border, that could have like missiles within striking distance within, you know, like seconds. It's hard to imagine the United States would tolerate that. Why would the Russians? You know, especially if you go poking the bear after a while and keep expanding NATO, when you said you wouldn't. It's just, you know, I'm not saying that the Russians are right, but I can see their perspective, especially from somebody like Putin, who's like this old KGB guy who saw the Soviet Union's former glory. And I think he's got, you know, that's like his mission is to kind of restore this former glory beyond his own, personal wealth and corruption. But,
thank you so much, Howard. And Ken, we have about 30 seconds for a response on this.
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead, Howard.
Well, I think, you make a very good point about the, you know, from their perspective. Yes, that's true. Absolutely. But it's a standoff. And, NATO has a purpose, too.
Yeah. Okay, I want to thank my guests, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for the show is Selena Reeder. The assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Lucy May.